Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Dark Spectrum. Last week we read, "The old woman who had abandoned her groceries was looking around from the corner. I began to push the cart toward her. 'Just leave them,' she called out to me while making a shooing motion with her hand. 'Go away. I don't want any trouble. Just go.' I shrugged and left the cart, muttering an apology to her as I did. Whether she heard it or not, I had no idea. I felt bad that she had been caught in the middle, but at least it had not become a gunfight." And now, Episode 11. I walked to my afternoon meeting with Chris. The solitude and the chill that fall air calmed me. After the altercation with Sam, I needed the time to decompress and gather my thoughts. I undertook a number of tactics to lose anybody who might be following me. I picked crowded areas to walk through and made sure to duck in and out of several stores, using alternative exits when available. By the time several hours had passed, I was certain I was not being followed. I became nauseous when I thought of how close I had come to using the grenade in a populated area. Was I so brazen as to risk innocent lives? Was I becoming the monster everybody thought that I was? Sister Bautista had once told me, "There is a spectrum between good and evil. What matters is the side of the spectrum you're on and the direction you're moving. The moment you take one step over to the dark spectrum, or even face that way, you're on the losing side." The religious undertones notwithstanding, there was something to her words. The dark spectrum led to a place I was not prepared to go. It was why I reviewed the times I'd killed people, looking for things I might have done differently. I had refrained from tossing the grenade, but I worried that I might find myself in such a situation again. Would I make the same choice? Or would my instincts to survive kick in and leave me dealing with the aftermath? Part of me wanted to just toss the grenade in the trash, but there was no telling what might happen to it if I did. But that wasn't the real reason I held on to it. Deep down, I wanted to know I still had it. I regretted letting Sam leave the warehouse. I had never expected him to return to Reed. Was it loyalty, or was Reed paying him bucket loads of money? I felt a little foolish I hadn't been in a position to make good on my threat to kill Sam if he came at me again. The words had come out of a moment of bravado, but it was a mistake I was not going to repeat. I hated looking the fool. After looking at every angle, I didn't see another way for me to have handled the situation with Sam earlier in the morning. Maybe I could have kept running and tried to lose them on foot, but that wasn't how I preferred to handle problems. A switch had flipped inside of me, and I'd done what I needed to survive. That switch was a difficult thing to turn off or control. The same thing had happened the day I had killed Beltran when he'd run for the rifle. I hadn't gone into Diagon's headquarters planning to kill him, but I'd arrived at a place where I had done just that, because I was a survivor. My logic was unflawed, but without mercy. People feared me for the wrong reasons. They were scared I was a monster who was out of control. Nothing could have been further from the truth. I was in total control, my logic hard and inescapable, but brutal. I wondered what direction Sister Bautista would say I faced, but shrugged it off. I let her get into my head too often. It had been close to a decade since I'd last seen her. Besides, she almost certainly had worked for Beltran. Noon came and went. I checked the news, but nothing happened. Whatever had motivated Sam's threat had hopefully been aimed at me, not at the city. If Reed and Sam had been willing to bomb a building just to talk to me, what would they do once it was evident I had spurned their offer? I had not bothered to pick up Sam's card or even look at it. I was not going to call, and I did not trust the card itself. I didn't see how it could be bugged or used to track me, but why take the risk? I forced down a burger, fries, and Coke for lunch. I had no appetite, but I didn't want to get caught in the middle of something on an empty stomach. I arrived at the park and made a circuit around it, wondering if I'd been followed despite my efforts. Nobody stuck out to me as I took my place on a bench in the middle of the grass. It was cold, even though it was still early afternoon and the sun was out. My blazer was thin, but combined with the sunlight, it had been warm enough while on the move. Now that I waited for Chris, the cold started to seep in. I kept my hands in my pockets for warmth while I stretched my legs and refrained from looking at my watch. Chris was late, which was unusual for her. She typically made a point of beating me to our meetings. She had sounded a bit more perturbed on the phone than usual, and I wondered if she had something going on. A family passed by my park bench. The mother and father had a kid between them that looked to be a couple years old. The kid said something in gibberish, and the parents laughed at his attempt to communicate. I was unable to look away. Had I ever had a time like that? My adoptive parents, Beltran's lackeys, had adopted me when I was young. Even my upbringing had been a lie. The things I'd been taught, the words they had said, it had all been part of a program conceived by Beltran. "You call that a disguise?" Chris asked quietly, breaking into my thoughts as she sat beside me on the bench. She wore a down coat and a thick woolen hat. She was dressed like she expected snow, even though the forecast hadn't called for anything of the sort. I grunted. "I've been here for half an hour." "You're lucky I came at all," she said. "I can't drop everything just because you have an emergency." She paused to pull dark hair from her eyes. A perceived emergency. She gave me a questioning look. "If you're not going to come in," she said, "what are you still doing here? Nothing is stopping you from going somewhere else. Peck doesn't appear to be trying to find you, but if you turn up on Spectrum in a way that's impossible to ignore, he'll be forced to take action." I hesitated, thinking of telling her I'd been on site at the Market Street bombing the day before, but decided against it. She had not led with it, and none of the news stories had connected me to it. It was a relief she hadn't assumed I had something to do with it. I picked up on something else, a hint of doubt in her voice when she spoke of Peck. I wished she would stop questioning me about his connection to all of this. "A couple of children have gone missing," I said. "Peck is behind it?" Chris asked. I snorted, noting the skepticism in her voice. "This is somebody new. Beltran has an admirer." I licked my lips. "A copycat. And you have proof of this?" "Not unless dead men start telling tales." "Dead?" She let out a sigh of exasperation. "What have you been up to, Jake? Do we need to prepare for another one of your ill-conceived escapades? The last time you had a conspiracy theory, a lot of people ended up dead." I ground my teeth. "Do not forget who started me down that path." "I had evidence," she said. "What do you have?" It's always easy to criticize from the outside. She hadn't been faced with my challenges. I doubted she'd have done any better, but returning her spite was a good way to ensure the conversation ended quickly. I needed help, which meant I had to bite my tongue. "Beltran's admirer is a dangerous man," I said through clenched teeth. At least I kept the volume out of my voice, if not the venom. "How did you find them?" she asked. I hesitated. She wasn't going to like what I said next, but I didn't see any way around it. I let out a breath before I plowed on, knowing I was about to receive another dose of doubt. "I reviewed the missing persons reports for the last 6 months." I held up my hand as her eyebrows rose. "Hear me out. Two of them were unusual, a boy and a girl. Both lost their parents in a violent fashion and went missing afterward." She let out a breath so low and forceful it might have been a growl. I could not tell. "You have nothing but conjecture," she said. "Did you bring me all the way down here because of a hypothesis? This barely even counts as that. You're guessing. You're shooting in the dark, hoping to hit something." "I killed two men last night when Beltran's admirer tried to recruit me," I said. "This is somebody I know?" "You will recognize the name," I said. "I want to see if you find anything that connects the missing children to either him or his company." "I barely believe you about the connection between Peck and Beltran. I've devoted resources to it for months and have turned up nothing. Not even my employer believes you. He has refused to give me any more resources to prove the connection." "And what is your employer after?" I wondered. I scanned the park and my eyes settled on several men who had approached while we had talked. They both wore suits, dark suits like Reed's men had worn. The hair on the back of my neck stood on end. One of them might have looked familiar, but it was hard to say from behind. "The connection is there, but I doubt you will find it. I looked away from the men but kept them in my peripheral vision. Beltran is gone, and Peck isn't being as, I searched for the word, aggressive, for the moment. This was an old argument and part of why I wasn't willing to tell her I suspected Reed Warner. If she learned that was who I was thinking about, she wouldn't believe me and would not do any research. I would be surprised if anything remains to be found. Convenient for your story, she said, isn't it? There was more than a drop of acid in the remark, but I ignored it. Chris, I said, I need you to do this for me. Poke around and see what you can find. If you can't turn up anything, no problem. But if you can find anything, the barest thread that leads back to my suspect, I will know I'm on the right trail. The men had not moved or even looked at us. Was it just the suits, or was there something else that made me keep checking them? Will you agree to come in? Chris asked. It doesn't have to be long. 30 minutes. My employer is anxious to meet you. He has prevented me from telling you much because he wants to tell you himself. This was new. It was the first I recalled her saying her employer wanted to tell me something. Why the change? I'll meet anybody you want, I said, at any time. Bring him with you to our next meeting. I watched her face for a reaction, but it was blank. He'll never go for it. He doesn't go out in public. I decided to give her false hope. I'll think about it. I won't make any promises, but I'll give it serious thought. She let out a sigh as she stood. Take care of yourself, Jake. If you were smart, you would get out of the city. I can't make any promises either, but send me the names and I'll see what I can do. When she had stood, one of the suited men had turned to look at her. He had his phone out as if reading the news, but there was a possibility he was using the rear camera to take a picture of her. I swore as I stood and grabbed her arm. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker, all rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.